Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have a very special guest today. His name is Jack Cashel, and I've interviewed Jack many times before. He, of course, was involved with writing a book recently on the downing of TW 800, but even before that, he had cooperated on collaborated on a video called Silence. It's a great video, and we recommend that to you. And I was really so surprised when I found out that Jack actually has his PhD from Purdue. He's taught at French University as a visiting Fulbright professor. He has actually been involved with all sorts of things other than simply investigative reporting. How did you get from teaching to investigative reporting, Jack?
Well, the answer is, I can answer that one word, and that's the Internet. What it's done is, before the Internet, you really needed the resources of a major news department to be a reporter. And you simply don't anymore. In fact, today, a major news department is an obstacle to good reporting.
I think you're absolutely right. Because if you want to get the truth out, you're going to have to get it out yourself. You don't want to have to go through an editor
right.
who can tell you what to do.
Yeah, exactly. The editors all have agendas. And then the publishers have agendas on top of the editors. And we know what the major newsrooms are like. They've built up that way over the last 40 or 50 years. And we can do better.
Well, I think you did, and I've really enjoyed your book. And in fact, one of my good friends, Tal Brook, said, you've got to get hold of this book and you've got to read it. And so I got hold of the book, of course, and I've read it. And it's a fascinating story. It's subtitled, How Intellectual Hucksters Have Hijacked American Culture. So I'm going to let you sort of pick up the story and go with it from there.
Well, let me tell you how I got into this, Stan. I was in Ireland. I was living in Ireland in the year 1993. In fact, my wife was a Fulbright that year, teaching at the University College of Galway. And one afternoon I was listening to Irish National Radio. They have only like two stations. I mean, this is the big national station. It has like an 80 share. I mean, you can appreciate that. Everyone listens to it. You don't get on there unless you have something very serious to say. They gave this guy an hour. He was a reporter from the Village Voice in New York, which is a left-wing publication. His name is Philip Noblite. And he was a literary detective, he had done this expose of Alex Haley, the author of Roots, the single most watched miniseries of all time, the best-selling non-fiction book of its generation, won a Pulitzer Prize for non-fiction, and it has been being taught in probably every classroom in America since then. What Noblite discovered was that several things. One, which was pretty obvious if anyone wanted to know it, it was public record, that in 1978, 2 years after Roots came out, Haley had been successfully sued by a white novelist for plagiarism. He had plagiarized like something like 80 major passages right from this novel to a book of nonfiction. Now, that should have set off alarms up and down the Beltway, but it did not. The only newspaper coverage I could find of that was a Washington Post article that started out with this headline, Bethesda Man, right? In other words, if this guy, the author, the white novelist, hadn't come from Bethesda, Maryland, the Washington Post wouldn't have thought this story newsworthy, right?
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jack Cashel here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, And our guest this afternoon is Jack Cashel, who we've had on as a guest many times on different subjects in the past. And I was really so surprised to find out that that he has his PhD. He's actually taught as professor, visiting professor in France as a Fulbright professor. But he right now, he's an investigative journalist, and he's given up the teaching because he wants to get the truth out to the American people. He has done a great job going into the background of what really happened to TW800, and they've lied to the American people, and the media has lied. We carry his video silenced. We think it is outstanding. And if Jack wants to put in a plug for his a book he wrote on that, I'll let him do that later. But right now we're going to be talking about a book he's written called Hoodwinked. And he was telling how he happened to get involved in this. He was living over in Ireland where his wife was a visiting professor, a Fulbright professor, and he heard somebody come onto the local major radio station there in Ireland, which of course is government controlled. And this man was from the Village Voice, which is a left-wing publication, but he had come out and said that this miniseries we saw in America and the book that spawned that, written by Alex Haley, it was called Roots, and it was all a fraud. It was all fraudulent, and yet so many people in America accepted it as truth. And here was a man who was willing to go on television and make it on radio and make this statement and write a book about it. And so pick up the story there. Well, did he get sued for calling?
No, of course not, because he was telling the truth. And what happened too? This is Philip Noble of the Village Voice. Not only did he pick up the story of the plagiarism, but he also talked to some serious genealogists who had followed in the footsteps of the great Alex Haley. I mean, these were serious, probably America's best. And they would just did it as a lark, just to be able to walk in Kunta Kinte's footsteps, and they found out, well, there were no footsteps, they just went here, there, and everywhere. They certainly didn't go back to Africa. As Noble found out when he got, after Haley died, he got into his records and his archives and his audio tapes, and he discovered that the whole thing had been a scam from the beginning, that Haley had set up with the government of the Gambia on the Gambian end, they wanted to bring more African-American tourists over. And on Haley's end, you just saw that a nonfiction work would have had hugely more power than a novel. And it did. Won the Pulitzer Prize. And it sold millions of copies, best-watched miniseries of all time, etc. So when Noble went forward with this, let me tell you first, Stan, when I came back to the United States, this is big news in the British Isles, not just in Ireland, but in England. They did a follow-up documentary on Roots.
All right, now hold that thought for just a minute, because we're going to bring our other stations back on board here, right at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jack Cashel. And, of course, he's talking about Roots, the fraud of the miniseries that was done here. The fraud of the book was all a lie. But when Jack comes back from Ireland, and of course, everybody over in Europe knows this is a lie. They've actually had a counter miniseries to bring this out in England. He comes back to the United States expecting everybody's going to know that Alex Haley had fooled all of these folks there and the major media and the major networks and the major publishers, and what did you find out?
Well, I came back, and to me it was just matter of fact, and I just brought it up one night as a dinner with some friends. I said, boy, what about that Alex Haley thing? Table conversation stops. They look at me like I'm crazy. What Alex Haley thing? Now, these are people who would know. These are academic types, intellectual types. Alex Haley thing? And I tried to explain it to them, and they thought I was crazy. And that's when I started looking, Stan. I started collecting stories. And every one of the stories has someone like Noble. That is, someone inside the academy, someone inside the institution or the field of study who stumbles across a major fraud, comes forward with that fraud, sometimes with trepidation, knowing that not likely to get patted on the back, but not expecting to have their heads chopped off, which happens in almost every case, and the story suppressed.
And we see this, if you understand, for instance, you read the book reviews in the New York Times or the Washington Post, and they really demonize and lash out and humiliate the author of a book, it's pretty a pretty good book, and they don't want you to read it.
It's the books they like that you got to be worried about. and this has been going on for a century. And there are, Roots is just one of probably 20 major classics that people are still being taught in universities today that are fraudulent from beginning to end. I mean, everything that Kinsey ever wrote. Margaret Mead's Coming of Age in Samoa. Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, hugely influential book. In fact, in Hoodwink, my book, I stick only to major stories of huge cultural influence. And I was steered in that direction by an extremely unlikely person. The only good thing that this person has done in his entire literary career, and that was Jason Blair, the rogue young cub reporter for the New York Times.
I mean, the one who he just pulled the wool over the eyes of those editors there for literally years, writing totally fraudulent stories in the newspaper of record here in America, right?
The great gray lady. Anyone who reads Jason Blair's stuff should have seen through it in a heartbeat. They wanted to believe him because he was, you know, he met all the criteria that a young cub reporter in the age of diversity is supposed to meet. However, what Blair did for me, I was reading his book, and when I started this project, Stan, I was thinking, oh, you know, there's a lot of fraud out there. There's guys like Jason Blair and, you know, Doris Kearns Goodwin, plagiarist, Stephen Ambrose, etc. But what Blair did for me is this. I'm reading his book, and it's an awful book called Burning Down My Master's House. And but he makes one very good comment. He says, how come my employment at the New York Times is considered the Times' low point when they're still honoring people like Walter Duranty and Herbert Matthews?
And, of course, that's really so significant because you go into the background of Walter Duranty and Herbert Matthews, and these are things that most Americans don't even ever think of. How we've backed communist dictators both in Russia and Cuba largely because of the lies told by the New York Times. And I don't think they were accidental. I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
Well, Duranty certainly knew what he was doing. Matthews, I think he knew what he was doing. I think he just played to be the innocent, stupid liberal.
Right.
Personally, I think that if you really got deep into Matthews, it would take you places where people don't want to go.
And, of course, for our listeners out there who don't know who Herbert Matthews was, he was the one who labeled Fidel Castro as the Abraham Lincoln, the George Washington of the Cuban Revolution.
Right. He discovered and made, you know, at the time when Matthews first went into the Sierra Maestra. By the way, he had fully misreported the Spanish Civil War 20 years earlier, but when he went into the Sierra Maestra in 1957, Castro was a nobody, you know, a 20-something, with 20 guys in his band, right? And they somehow find the ace South American, you know, Latin American reporter from the New York Times. And that's where I'm suspicious, this meeting, you know, where they just sort of run into him. And they bring him up to the Sierra Maestra. And first of all, Castro purposely dupes Matthews, who wanted to be duped, into thinking that there were hundreds, if not thousands, in his band. He'd have people changing uniforms, walking back and forth in front of him, you know, calling on the radio to other bands and other hills and, you know, stuff like that. But that where Matthews has no excuse is in how he reported the agenda of Fidel Castro. And he reported him, just as you said, Stan, as this liberator bringing a new deal to Cuba. He assured his readers, and New York readers, New York Times readers in 1957 were pretty conservative in a lot of ways. He assured them that Castro was not a communist. In fact, so influential was this series of front-page articles that Herbert Matthews ran on Fidel Castro. I mean, at that time, he knew more than the CIA. He lulled the State Department and the CIA into thinking that, yes, Castro was a good thing for Cuba. So we let, you know, we didn't intervene. We let Castro do his thing. We let him take over Cuba. That had the quiet blessing of the CIA, right?
And the State Department.
And the State Department. Now, the fact that Che Guevara, you know, who was Castro's right-hand man, had named his son Vladimir should have been a tip-off.
You know? Vladimir for Vladimir Lenin, of course.
Exactly.
Right. And, of course, the thing is that Fidel Castro had even gone on the radio in Bogota, Colombia in 1948 and announced he was a communist.
Yeah.
The American ambassador, who I happened to adopt the opportunity to interview, and one of these days I'll make my interview with him available, said, you know, we knew he was a communist, and the State Department knew he was a communist, and when I was going to go to Cuba, why, who did brief me on what was going on in Cuba? Not the Assistant Secretary of Latin American Affairs, they brought in Herbert Matthews to brief an American ambassador.
Wow, that's amazing. And what a lot of people in your audience don't know is then, is that the CIA and the State Department have been historically leftist.
People even might think they were pro-communist just from what they do.
Right. I mean, Alger Hiss, for instance, was one of their, you know, golden boys.
Right.
And I talk about Alger Hiss in the book, too, because, you know, with these people, with the people I talk about, Stan, are people who generated libraries of information, of misinformation. I'm not talking about just a bad story here, or an evening newscast that goes awry, or even a Jason Blair. I'm talking about books and movies, things that where you have the opportunity to tell the truth if you really cared to. You know, they take a whole community of support to put out. It's a collaborative effort, fraud, and it can only exist when the cultural establishment wants it to exist.
And, of course, you do an excellent job discussing the Chambers Hiss controversy and, of course, going into the background of Whitaker Chambers' book, Witness, which was a book that had such a profound impact on my life 43, 44 years ago.
Yeah. I would say this is when after people go out and buy Hoodwink, which is only 250 pages long, go out and buy Witness. I would say it's Witness is probably, when you say Stan, probably the single most important conservative book of the last half century.
I agree with you, Tony. But you take so many of the really important quotations from it. Quotations I remember from 40-some years ago.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure it was to read your book and see those quotations there.
Well, it was such a pleasure to do the research. I mean, I got to read... I had to read a lot of bad books. I had to read Roots, which I never read before, which is more insidious than I had thought, and I had to read all of Durante and all of Herbert Matthews, you know, all those people. But I also got to reread Witness, you know, and I got to tell the stories of the good guys. That is, the people who, like Whitaker Chambers, who put their lives on the line to tell the truth.
Why don't you tell our listeners about Walter Durante? Because probably a lot of them have no idea who he was, and yet probably more than anybody else, he was instrumental in getting American recognition of the communists, which allowed them to begin borrowing money in the West, gave them legitimacy for this criminal regime.
Right. I would say this is, you know, when I consider the people that I wrote about, the fraudulent people I exposed, many of them thought they were doing the right thing. Walter Durante had no illusions. I would say he's the single most evil person that I write about and probably had the single greatest negative influence on America of anyone in the 20th century. Durante was a New York Times reporter. In 1913, he was in Paris and he got his job, he made his contacts through this incredibly diabolical, and I use that word literally here, a series of black masses called the Paris Workings. And they went on from 1913 to 1914. I'd love to know who else was involved, because I wouldn't be surprised if World War I wasn't generated out of this. These were dark. You know, these were dark, dark things. Whatever fate that Walter Durante had coming in, he lost. So he came out of it, as virtually everyone else I write about, is a full-blown atheist. And he started looking for substitute systems. He was also pretty much of a sexual pervert, and he found the perfect place to take his atheism and his perversion, which was Moscow in 1920. He was the New York Times reporter for the next dozen years. And in that position, he got to be buddy-buddy with Joseph Stalin, especially in the later part of that. And in 1928, and starting in 1920, it really didn't get into gear until 29-30, Stalin launched what's called the five-year plan, which sounds innocuous enough. But basically what that meant was taking a nation of small farmers, pulling them off the farm, and turning the farms over into huge collectives. Now, any small farmers anywhere are the most stubborn people in the world. They're going to resist, as they did in the Soviet Union. So what Stalin essentially did was to murder 7 million of them. That's 7 million. This is before Kristallnacht. 7 million dead. These weren't accidental starvation. Some of them starved to death, but they were forcibly starved. The ones who tried to flee were murdered. The ones who, tried to protect their livelihood or their livestock or whatever were murdered. 7 million dead. Durante knew this was going on. The evidence of this is overwhelming. He admitted it himself. He said, hey, you know, he may have been the one who coined the phrase, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs.
Hey, hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Jack Cashel. His book, Hoodwink. You'll want to read it.
tapes of genocide, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America: the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting the attention of the smart money investor. And that's with no small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Jack Cashill. I should call him Dr. Cashill, but I've called him Jack for so long, I'm not going to change. And, of course, he has been a visiting professor, Fulbright professor. But he's a fascinating individual, a man of many talents, and did a wonderful job with a video we carry called Silence. And if you really want to understand the degree of deception in our government today, and how people are required to lie under oath before Congress. They should go to prison, but of course nobody ever goes to prison, unless maybe a Martha Stewart or somebody like that. They want to make an example out of him, but this is an amazing, amazing pity. But right now we're talking about his book, Hoodwinked, and he's talking about Walter Duranty, who is a New York Times reporter, and this was, of course, back in the 1920s, late 1920s, the early 1930s, when Stalin was systematically killing, murdering, starving to death, and committing terrible atrocities against 7 million people. And Walter Duranty is covering all this up and writing these wonderful articles in the New York Times about how wonderful Russia is under Comrade Stalin. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And then what happens, Stan, is that because of his articles, and at that time, there's not much information coming out of the Soviet Union, and a lot of it's going through Walter Duranty. I mean, he's the New York Times guy. You know, he's supposed to know. Because of those articles, FDR chooses to recognize the Soviet Union, and he invites, in 1933, Joseph Duranty back for the ceremony. They give him the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting, right? He writes a book about this called I Write As I Please, which is about as appropriately titled a book as I've ever seen. And he's the star of the day. The net result of this is that all of those communists in the American government and the American intelligentsia, which was a whole lot of people in the 30s, I mean, it wasn't just a tiny fraction of people, it was a major movement in the United States, they got to go into World War II posing as though the Soviet Union was just another country like the United States, as though it did not have a Holocaust on its hands to account for. And the net effect today is that you, for instance, in the university today, it's perfectly okay to be a neo-Marxist, right? You can't be a neo-fascist, I'm going to tell you that, because Hitler is tainted justly by his Holocaust. Stalin is not. So you can be a neo-Marxist and you, hey, you're a neo-Marxist, I'm a neo-Marxist too, how about that, you know?
You never will see any sort of a movie about the horrible atrocities of Stalin. They just are not allowed on American movie screens or television screens.
No, ask your audience to think of that, the last movie in which we've seen a scene of a gulag, right? Or we've seen a scene of communist oppression. They haven't seen it. You know, the Berlin Wall falls, and we can't make a movie about that. We can't make a movie about solidarity. You know, we can't. This stuff, it's like it didn't happen, you know?
Well, when you control the media, why you control the reality. The people,
yep.
Until people understand the media is controlled, and that's why I do what I do, and that's what you do, until they understand that they cannot be free. They cannot think independently.
Right.
They have to learn to challenge everything, even what they hear on this program.
That's exactly right. And that's why what I do in the book is to enhance its credibility. It's not me saying that so-and-so's a fraud or so-and-so's a fraud. I am using people from within their own community who had nothing to gain by exposing them, who had no political agenda, in fact, who had everything to lose by exposing them, but who were sufficiently dedicated to the truth that they thought that they had to do what they did.
And some of these were really far leftists, weren't they?
They were. Several of them, whom I've spoken with, Nobile for one, David Stoll, the guy who blew the whistle on Nobel Prize winner Rigoberta Menchú, they were not pleased about being in his book because they don't want to be lumped with, it bothers them in a sense that there's been a whole history of progressive fraud, I mean, for a century.
Well, I think, you know, really the story of Duranty and the fact that recently, why people said that they should take that Pulitzer Prize away from him, and yet it's still there, and he's still, you know, lauded and applauded there at the New York Times, and Jason Blair sees that and says, why do I get a bad rap, and Duranty gets off.
Yeah, Duranty gets off. He's still in the Hall of Heroes.
Right.
He still has his Pulitzer Prize. So does Alex Haley. Rigoberta Menchú still has her Nobel Prize. They don't take these prizes away. Very, very rarely, I should say, that they take the prizes away. They continue on as though nothing happened. My daughter last year, you know, at a $40,000 a year university, was studying Margaret Mead. Margaret Mead had been busted 30 years ago.
And for sure, her whole concept of this coming of age in Samoa was all a fraud.
Right.
And yet, of course, they still study this in universities as if, just like they study evolution, as if, oh, it's a scientific fact. Well,
yeah, exactly right.
It took me a long time to unlearn everything I learned in my university. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jack Cashel talking about his book, Hoodwinked. Fascinating read.
Really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Jack Cashel. We're talking about his book, Hoodwinked. And of course, there's just so many different instances. He talks about how the media has published things that were blatantly untrue. And many of these people have been lauded and applauded and are still lauded and applauded today. And it's so obvious that they lied, but what they did was they shaped the reality of a whole generation, several generations of America, to be tolerant, to be understanding of the radical left that has killed. Well, Stalin is attributed to, by Solzhenitsyn, to have killed over at least 60 million human beings. So hit next to him, why Hitler was sort of a piker, and yet we never see Stalin condemned. It's only how wicked Adolf Hitler was, and he was wicked. But you can't, you know, qualify and have comparison of wickedness. If you're going to, then Stalin would be 10 times worse than Adolf Hitler, and yet we never see anything on television about the wickedness of Stalin. I thought that was so important to bring out in your book. Go ahead, Jack.
And the problem with that down the road, and is that one is allowed to be a Marxist today. I mean, you know, every university has a dozen of them. And they're allowed to continue to peddle their fraud. What's interesting, though, is what's happened over time, and this is odd and bizarre, But I trace the beginning of the sort of the hate America school to about to 1925, in fact, when Stalin took over from Lenin in the Soviet Union. And more of a realist than Lenin, he understood that you wouldn't be able to start a revolution in the United States, but what he could do is discredit the idea of America before the world. So for the next, 60 years, the Soviet Union did just that. They would look for opportunities to discredit America, and thus they could advance the Soviet idea, which was the sort of alternative idea. Now, what's curious in the last 20 years is after the Soviet Union collapsed and after they ceased to be an influence, the hatred of America is so ingrained in the left, their willingness and their desire to tarnish the idea of America before the world is so ingrained that they don't even need an alternative anymore or a sponsor state. They just do it because they want to do it. So you get guys like Noam Chomsky, who's particularly offensive to me, Ward Churchill, Michael Moore. They're nihilists. They have no alternative agenda. At least Stalin had another idea, however evil and stupid it was. They don't even have an alternative.
No, well, there's no question at all. The thing is that they point out some things that are true, but they have no alternative at all. They hate America. They hate everything we stand for. And I think you bring out in your book that you really what energizes a lot of these people is they've turned against God.
You look at it, what I identify are four major strands of progressive thought in the 20th century. And actually, this was a good exercise because I never stopped to do this before. And I identify them as the Soviet Marxist strand, the sort of the radical naturalist Darwinian strand, the sexual revolutionary strand, and the multiculturalist strand. And what I discovered, Stan, in reading all these biographies of these people and autobiographies, is that at some point in their life, regardless of which strand they belong to, I mean, Kinsey, for instance, was an anti-communist Republican. I mean, so it's not just Democrat, Republican, left, right in the way we think about it. What it is this. It's progressive, that is, and traditional. Every one of these people, all the frauds that I document, at some point early in their career, denounce God. They pull God out of their life. And then they decide, okay, in a godless world, what kind of paradise can I create? So if you're Margaret Mead or you're Kinsey or Margaret Sanger, Masters and Johnson, you create a sexual paradise. If you're the Marxist, like Lillian Hellman or Dalton Trumbo or Alger Hiss, you create a Marxist paradise. For Rachel Carson, Paul Ehrlich, those kind of people, you create a radical naturalist evolutionary paradise. And then for the multiculturalists, like Ward Churchill, for instance, or Michael Moore or Noam Chomsky, etc., you create this sort of, mixed nihilistic kind of anti-American paradise, where you're just better than everyone else. And the thing is, when you take God out of the world, as they say, in a world without God, anything's permitted.
I think that's really so beautiful. Who said that? Because somebody said that.
I had to look this one up because there's so much guff about who actually said it. One of the brothers Karamazov says something like that in the Brothers Karamazov, the Dostoevsky novel, and it was paraphrased by Jean-Paul Sartre. And so I think Sartre should get credit for it, although he said it in French, so it's something else altogether.
If anything goes, and pardon me, if there is no God, then anything goes.
Anything permitted, right.
And, of course, one of the things I thought was so interesting, you talked about how Whitaker Chambers had been an atheist.
Yes.
And it was only when he began to return to a realization there was a God that he turned against communism.
That's exactly right, and that's at the heart of it. Because he realized that, and he also makes a very persuasive argument against Darwinism. Because what turned him to God was looking at his daughter's ear. And he had this revelation. It was such a perfect little ear. He said, this isn't an accident. Something created this. And that started a whole chain of thought that led him back to God. And once he realized, there's only two kinds of people in the world. There's people who believe in God, and the people who believe in man. And he realized that you can't do both simultaneously. And for him, the difference between a communist on the one hand and like a fellow traveler or a liberal or a progressive on the other hand wasn't a question of vision. It was a question of commitment, And he, in fact, he respected the communists more because at least they were willing to put their, you know, the money where their commitment was rather than sort of fussing around about it. But once he made that step, he became persona non grata on the left. Not only that, as you know, Stan, not only did he renounce communism once he found God, he renounced homosexuality, which he had been tempted by throughout his earlier life. And that, now that makes him a double pariah on the left, you know?
I'll never forget what he said about Alger Hiss. Somebody said, oh, you hate Hiss. And he said, oh, I could never hate a man who agrees with me that that life is not worth living, that one is not willing to die for. And he realized that Hiss really was very sincere. He was willing to die for what he believed in.
Yeah.
And Chambers was, too. And I wonder how many people out in the listening audience really believe in anything that strongly, whether on the left or the right.
No, you're absolutely right. He admired Hiss's commitment. He was not at all surprised when Hiss refused to buckle, you know. He said, this guy's a soldier. You know, he's not a, you know, he's been spying on the United States for the last 10, 15 years. Spying to the point where he was named the first Secretary General of the United Nations in 1945.
And, of course, the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And,
right.
And praised by John Foster Dulles and Dean Acheson and Felix Frankfurter, Supreme Court Justice. But
and,
of course,
you know, what I discovered, one fact I discovered in researching this, which surprised me, was that when Alger Hiss was, the first conference was in San Francisco, and Edward Stettinus was then the Secretary of State, they recruited to be their speechwriter for their opening speeches to the United Nations, none other than Dalton Trumbo.
For our listeners, he was a well-known communist, of course.
Right, he was a big Hollywood communist. He was one of the Hollywood Ten.
Very, very talented writer.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he was the most popular screenwriter in Hollywood.
Right.
But he's an out-of-the-closet communist. By 1945, you know, he came out in 43. He had been a closeted communist for the previous 10 years, but...
He was a great, though, scriptwriter. He really...
Yeah.
I remember one of the movies he wrote called Johnny Gets Your Gun.
Yeah.
Powerful, powerful. And The Lonely of the Brave, that with Kirk Douglas. I'll never forget that. Written by... But these people are totally dedicated, but they're totally dedicated to the destruction of America.
Mm-hmm.
And they know everything wrong with it, but they can't see anything right with it, or they don't understand its heritage, because they've all rejected God.
Right, and after World War II... You know, during World War II, of course, we were allies with the Soviet Union, so that for 3 or 4 years, these communists in Hollywood, and there were many, many of them in the Screenwriters Guild, they got to write patriotic movies, you know, because they got to advance the cause. We were in a shared cause. And then when the World War II ended, Stalin sent down orders, the number one enemy, our number one enemy is now the fascist nation of America. The days of collaboration and cooperation are over. And anyone who bucked that, and I give the example of the one fellow who did, I mean, they thought McCarthy was rough. I mean, find out what the communists did to their own who tried to assert their independence in that kind of world. You didn't do it.
Well, I think it's still, there's a lot of confusion today about Alger Hiss. How do we know that Hiss was a communist? I mean, well, there was gets into the Verona intercepts, which most people have never even heard of because of the degree of control of the media. What were the Verona intercepts, and why were they important, and what did that have to do with Alger Hiss?
Well, during the 1940s, the United States government had successfully decoded the Soviet transmissions. And the problem was they could not go public with that information, because they didn't want to let the Soviets know that they knew. Also, even after the Soviets found out, they didn't want to make a public fuss about it because it would have, you know, exacerbated the Cold War. So it wasn't until the early 1990s that it was open. However, at that time, key people knew who the Soviet agents were within the United States. There were, according to Venona, about 350 active Soviet agents in American government. McCarthy may have understated the problem. Someone was probably leaking McCarthy some of the Venona information. He didn't get it directly. Very, very few people knew about it. But when they prosecuted Alger Hiss, when they prosecuted the Rosenbergs, they knew they were guilty. I mean, it wasn't just based on evidence. Of course, they had to build a case without Venona, which they did, but they knew they were guilty. And when the Venona, the cryptology was opened in the early 90s, and when the Soviet archives were opened in the 90s, there was no longer any doubt at all. And the descriptions of Alger Hiss and his role are so specific that only a total con artist could convince himself that it was someone other than Hiss they were talking about. And, of course, even if you read the congressional hearings when they first busted Hiss in the late 40s, I mean, you can read a page or two and you know that Hiss is lying. I mean, it's transparent. Just, so it's such a great story, the whole Hiss Chambers story. Those who don't know it, just on that alone is, I think, worth picking up Hoodwinks. And then I would recommend you really pursue it deeply, because it is the great American story.
Of course, there are so many great American stories that you color, and you've got a whole that you cover. You've got a whole chapter on Colors of the Wind. What's that all about?
Well, I chose the song. I tied the title Colors of the Wind because I remember taking my daughter to see the Disney movie Pocahontas. And maybe I'm a little more sensitive than other people in the theater, but when Pocahontas sings to Captain John Smith, here's the opening lines of her song called Colors of the Wind, which won an Oscar. It goes like this. You think you own whatever land you land on. The earth is just a dead thing you can claim. Right? She just summed up the American experiences in pure multicultural lingo. These imperialist hegemons came over, stole the land, and they just used it as a dead thing. Now, I have a PhD in American Studies. I've read 100 or more memoirs of early settlers. How utterly and totally liberated they were by having their own property. It's just hard to put into words. They do it much better than I do. This was a wonderful, glowing experience. I mean, if you took all the, right now there are more people living in the state of Kansas than were living in North America when the first Europeans arrived. I mean, this was a nation with huge amounts of open, unused land. And what they've done, though, is they've turned that whole story around so that now even Disney cartoons allow, students to hate themselves, to, especially for white students, non-Indian students, to detest themselves and their culture. And they'll use whatever means they can in the whole multicultural canon, including fraud, to perpetuate that. Thus Roots, thus, Rigoberto Menchú, Edward Said, Leonard Peltier, all of these stories, one after another, one of them based on fraud after another.
And, of course, they do such a magnificent job of getting people confused so they don't know what to believe in. And if you don't believe in anything, then you'll embrace anything. And this is really what they want.
Right, and that's why this book is so useful for students going back to college. I mean, because students are simply not in position to argue against this. I mean, their professors are going to tell them this stuff one thing after another, And, even Stan, even you, doing talk radio, you've really got to be on your toes because every day someone's going to throw some new nonsense at you, But if you're a student and you trust the authority of your teacher, your tendency is to yield to it.
And that's a great tragedy of today. They take, otherwise healthy young kids, they put them in college, and they don't educate them, they indoctrinate them. I know, because that's what happened to me when I went to college.
Yeah, me too. And, for instance, I had a funny experience a couple weeks ago. My undergraduate alma mater calls asking for money. And I went to a small Catholic college, a pretty inoffensive place. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't give you any money anymore. And they said, why? I said, because you have no purpose. You've lost your way. I mean, you have no direction that I find worth rewarding. And they said, what do you mean by that? I said, give me 60 seconds on your website, and I'm going to find something that will make you think twice about giving, right? So I guess, go ahead. So I get on the website while he's on the phone, and I find that that very night, they're showing and offering some sort of presentation on campus. This is a small Catholic college, comparing Che Guevara to Jesus Christ. And I said to the guy, I said, look at this. Here you are comparing Che Guevara to Jesus Christ in a positive way. I said, I assure you, Jesus Christ never shot a 12-year-old for stealing food from his camp.
You know? And, of course, this is a Catholic college. Yep.
Yeah. I said, Jesus Christ didn't call his son Vladimir, you know.
And what was the response?
He said, boy, you got a point there.
Hey, look, let's get your website out. We're almost out of time. Let's get your website out.
Yeah, so. My website is www.cashel.com. That's C-A-S-H-I-L-L.com.
That's cashel.com.
Right.
Where can people get your book?
They can go to, should be able to get it at any major bookstore. They can go to Amazon. Or they can buy it. You can buy a signed first edition from my website and help the Cashel Girls College Fund, my favorite charity right now.
Well, Jack, it's always a pleasure having you on here, and I hope we can get you onto our other programs as well. Because
hey, you keep up the good work, sir.
I will. God bless. Bye bye.
Okay,
and God bless. Right. Okay. Well, that was Jack Cashel, and really, I think it's so important as you read the book. He time and time again points out that really, what was the defining point of all of these people, rather on the left and the right, was their attitude towards God. And once you understand that, you can begin to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this afternoon's program right here at Radio Liberty.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM? If you're looking for a residential care facility,
have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
It starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Jack Cashel. Let me simply point out that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree that we have an important message, the information you're not going to get through the regular channels of communication, We do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you can get our four best tapes of the month, or you can get along with our newsletter, or you may just simply want to subscribe to the newsletter, which you may. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We've taken our newsletters and put them into pamphlets. We have actually three separate pamphlets, each one about 50 pages, going into the foreknowledge of 911. How do we know that the government knew the attack was coming? And, of course, part one is called The Terrorist Attack, part two, Spying on America, and part three, Triumph of the Intelligence Community. You can get them separately for $3.95 each, or get them all together for $9.95. We have an excellent four-tape set, 911 update. To show you that they knew the attack was coming, recently, of course, it's come out that they were watching Muhammad Atta. Oh, they had no idea they were here? Of course they knew they were here. They were watching everything that they did. That's what Zacharias Massui said. I was watched from the time I arrived in the United States. Do you think it was just accidental that he ran into Nicholas Berg, the poor fellow they beheaded over there in Iraq? Who beheaded him? Well, I don't know who beheaded him. All I know is that the last thing we saw, he was there in an official U.S. Army issue orange jumpsuit just before he was beheaded. But he, of course, had run in just by accident to Zacharias Massui. And you can get that off the Internet. Go to Google, type it in, Massui, Nicholas Berg, and you'll find that strange coincidence. Ladies and gentlemen, so much of the truth is we're not getting. And Iraqis are dying. American boys are dying. And we're moving towards World War III. You can do something. You can help us get the truth out across America. And hopefully it will lead to a great revival, because that's the only thing that's going to turn America around. We do hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to take you into the spiritual battle that we're involved in. For we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And believe me, there is spiritual wickedness in high places in both of our political parties. Well, please consider getting Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special with a book, the video, and the audio tape. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get the videos we offer. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the story of the music industry, with all the people who are dedicated to Satanism in it. And, of course, you can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, which will give you an overview of the spiritual battle in which we're involved. If you haven't yet read Johanna Michelson's excellent book entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil, we hope that you'll want to get that. And we do have a number of interviews with Johanna that gives you an excellent overview of her experience as a medium in contact with beings from another world. And ladies and gentlemen, there is another world there. If you'd like a copy of our June newsletter, it's the Occult Hierarchy Part 2. That's the Occult Hierarchy Part 2 that introduces you to people who are in tune with these people from the other side. And these are people, high government officials, will tell you about all the other government officials that are involved in the occult movement, in the contact with beings from another world. And that's, if you want a copy, free copy of the newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy Part 2, 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website, radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters. You can listen to our programs live at least 3 hours a day. You can, of course, listen to our archive programs. Get other people listening. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, when we'll be back once again, may the Lord be with you.